We're slowly working our way through the books of the Bible every once in a while, just to give a brief summary so that we might understand the contents that are within each of the books. So when I try to lay out an outline for Judges, I don't know if I'll make it all the way through Judges or not, because there's so many good stories in Judges, it's hard to just do that in a real quick summary. The book of Judges itself continues the history of Israel. Israel had been enslaved in Egypt, was rescued by God, using Moses to bring them out. Books of Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, all cover that journey out of Egypt. We then went through the book of Joshua, which was the conquering of the land of Canaan. And with the death of Joshua, this is where the book of Judges begins. It's a period of time that goes from Joshua all the way up to just a few generations before they begin having kings. Israel existed as a country without any centralized government for many years. In fact, the period of the Judges lasts about 380 years. So longer than our country has been around. Israel was existing without any form of central government, other than through God himself. We know it was about 380 years. If you go to 1 Kings chapter 6, just for a moment. I told you to go to Judges. Now, we'll be mostly in Judges. But 1 Kings chapter 6. And in verse 1 it says, "Now it came about in the 480th year after the sons of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, he began to build the house of the Lord." The beginning of the temple was done 480 years after they had left Egypt. So if you take the fact that they had wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, there was actually a couple of years before they started wandering. It took roughly about 10 years for the conquering of the land of Canaan. You got David's reign. You got Saul's reign before that. You have 4 years of Solomon's reign. Start subtracting all that out, and what you have left is there was about 380 years of the Judges. Unlike the time under Moses and Joshua, that, like I said, there was no single leader in the land of Canaan, the land of Israel now. And probably the very last verse in Judges summarizes what this was like. So if you go over to Judges chapter 21 and look at the very last verse, verse 25. It says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And that basically describes what we have. We have a period of time when, really, when you come down to it, we had anarchy. Everybody did what they thought was right. And so, therefore, things often went wrong. Each tribe basically managed its own territories. At times, they would help neighboring tribes out when certain difficulties came in, but each one was basically independent. And what the book of Judges shows the cyclic nature of Israel's faithfulness, or unfaithfulness, depending on how you want to look at it. They would start out real strong, but with each passing generation, they would get a little bit weaker and start forgetting about what the other generations knew about. In fact, go back to Judges chapter 2, Judges chapter 2, and we have a very good summary of what was happening. It says that when Joshua had dismissed the people, and the sons of Israel went each to his inheritance to possess the land, and the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord, which he had done for Israel. Then Joshua the son of Nun, the son, servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110, and they buried him in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaz. And all that generation also there were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. So this is basically the history that we see. One generation understood what God did for them. They saw it for themselves. The next generation remembered it. And then the next generation completely forgot it. It wasn't being passed down from one generation to the next. And therein lies the problem. God would then allow neighboring countries to terrorize the worst offending tribes. They would suffer under the brutality of the nation for a number of years, and eventually they would wake up to the fact that they needed help, and they needed to seek God again. God would then raise up a judge, a leader, to represent God to the people. In fact, that's in some places where the word judges is actually the word for God. It's not that the judge was a god on earth, he was God's representative on earth. And that's one of the ways to translate the word judge. He would raise up a judge, a leader, represent God. The judge would lead the people to defeat the enemy. He would rule over them for a period of time. And then the cycle would start all over again. Now, as you're reading through Judges, you might think, well, all these different events are national events. But you need to understand that each one of them actually is a section of the country. And sometimes there was overlap. One section was doing all right, while another section was all being conquered by some other nation. So this is not always the whole land of Israel. And so sometimes we have overlaps, which also explains if you add up all the years, you get more than the 380 years that are mentioned there. But that's because, like I said, they don't always fall one right after the other. That sometimes they were overlapping one section with the other. Now, in the book of Judges, we're going to divide it in basically three sections. In chapters 1 through 2, in this section, basically, we have the period that's just after Joshua's death. So the bad things haven't settled in yet. In chapter 1, while Joshua had taken out the key cities that occupied the land of Canaan, it was left up to each tribe to clear out their own territory. And Judges chapter 1 basically explains how the various tribes started their chore of going through and cleaning out their territories. This is what God had commanded of them under Moses. Just hold again your fingers here and go back to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7, starting with verse 1. When the Lord your God shall bring you into the land which you are entering to possess it, and shall clear out the way many nations before you, the Hittites, the Gerizzites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations stronger and greater and stronger than you, and when the Lord your God shall deliver them before you, shall defeat them, and you shall utterly destroy them, you shall make no covenant with them, and show them no favor. Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them, nor give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. But you shall do to them, you shall tear down their altars, smash their sacred pillars, hew down their asherims, and burn their graven images with fire. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his own possession, out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. The Lord did not set his love on you or choose you because you are more in number than all the peoples, for you were the fewest of the people. But because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which he swore to your forefathers, the Lord brought you out by a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery, from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, a faithful God who keeps his covenant and his loving kindness to a thousandth generation with those who love him and keep his commandments. So God basically says, you need to drive these people out. If you don't, they're going to lead you astray. And this is basically what we find in the book of Judges. They started with a lot of gung-ho. And they, if you read through chapter 1, it starts listing all these cities that they conquered, and they threw various people out. And it looks like after a while, they just plain got tired. They were doing really good, and then they just kind of started slacking off, and they didn't quite get all the cities out of their territory done. And Judah started first, and they did probably the biggest push, but then they started slacking off. And then it was talk about the next tribe, and they slacked off even more. And the next tribe slacked off even more. And the next tribe slacked off even more. And pretty soon you got most of the country still not conquered. And in chapter 2, it basically gives us the overall cycle, as we already started to read. But I'd like to read in Judges chapter 2, starting with verse 11. Does it give us a summary of the entire events? They forgot about God, and it says, "Then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples, who were around them, and bowed themselves down to them. Thus they provoked the anger of the Lord to anger. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and Asheroth. And the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers, who plundered them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies around them, so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Wherever they went, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil, as the Lord has spoken and as the Lord has sworn to them, so that they were severely distressed. Then the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they played the harlot after other gods and bowed themselves down to them. They turned aside quickly from the way in which their fathers had walked, and in obeying the commandments of the Lord, they did not do as their fathers. And when the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judges and delivered them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groanings because of those who oppressed and afflicted them. But it came about when the judge died that they would turn back and act more corruptly than their fathers in following other gods to serve them and to bow down to them. And they did not abandon their practices or their stubborn ways. So the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. And he said, because this nation transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and has not listened to my voice, I will also no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua had left before he died, in order to test Israel by them, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk in it as their fathers did or not. So the Lord allowed the nations to remain, not driving them out quickly, and he did not give them into the hand of Joshua." And this basically is then the setting. The rest of the book of Judges describes each of these cycles. How they would turn away from God, go start worshiping false gods, God would send in an enemy nation. They would finally groan underneath of it. God would send a rescuer. They would serve God for a little while, and then they would go back. But oftentimes, each time they cycle, they would get worse than the time before. So that's what the next period of in Joshua, we go for, in Judges, chapter 3 through 16, is the Judges. Each of the series of judges that were done. Now the first one is in chapter 3, and it's in verses 1 through 11. And that judge was Othniel. And it was because of Mesopotamia. I misspelled it, sorry. M-O-S-O. Mesopotamia. Anyway. Israel, we find out in chapter 3, starting with verse 5, it says, the sons of Israel lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. They took their daughters for themselves as wives and gave their own daughters to their sons and served their gods. And the sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and forgot the Lord their God and served the Baals and the Asherahs. The very thing Moses warned them, saying, don't do this. It wasn't long after they were in the land, and if God lax, they started doing the very thing that Moses warned them about. And so what God did was send in Mesopotamia, which is on the north side, and they ruled that area for 8 years. Then Othniel, who was a nephew of Caleb, that you remember from, there's two spies that actually were successful or proper in saying that they could take the land of Canaan. Only Joshua and Caleb were allowed to go into the land of Canaan. Caleb's nephew was Othniel. And he was the first judge to rise up. He raised up an army, expelled Mesopotamia, and the land had peace for about 40 years. But the problem was, Israel turned back, after Othniel died, Israel turned right back into doing sin again. And so from in chapter 3, from 12 down to, that's the verse now, 30, they started sinning again, so God sent in Moab. That's a country from the south side of Israel. And Moab took over, ruled the area for 18 years. Mesopotamia did for 8. Now they went back to sin, so God's giving them a longer punishment. 18 years this time. And a judge was raised up. His name was Ehud. So we got Othniel and Ehud. Ehud is remembered because he was left-handed. Seems to be an odd reason to remember somebody, but he was remembered because he's left-handed. He managed to sneak in to the king's presence, the king of Moab's presence, with a sword strapped to his thigh. Now, most people search before you go in the presence of a king to look, make sure you don't have any weapons. But basically what we find out is the guards were getting a little lazy. And since everybody's right-handed, they check the left side. You grab your sword this way. And they were checking people, but Ehud was left-handed, so he had his sword strapped to his right thigh, hidden underneath his cloak. It was only an 18-inch sword, not a real long sword, but it was effective enough. And he went in and said that he had a secret message for the king of Moab. And the king of Moab fell for it. Sent everybody out of the room, says, okay, what's the secret message? And he basically says, I got a message to you from God. Pulled out the sword and stabbed him. Only problem that Ehud had was the king, Eglon, was so fat that when he put in the 18-inch sword, he couldn't get it back out because it completely got covered. The sword got completely covered. So he left it there. Ran out, then, of course, that would left Moab in chaos. Their king just suddenly died. Ran out, raised an army, and then drove Moab out of the country. And he actually was able to establish peace for 80 years after he was judge. Still didn't work. We don't know a lot about the next one. Other than it's in chapter 3, verse 31. We know that the Philistines were causing problems. They're on the basically southwest side. Moab was on the southwest east side. Philistines were on the southwest side. And a man named Shamgar is mentioned as a judge. The only thing we know about him is that he managed to kill 600 Philistines with a wooden stick, which is kind of impressive. Because he did it with an ox goad, that's just a pointed stick, and he managed to kill 600 men. But that's about all that we're told. We're not told any time periods or anything. So we just don't know how when this happened, how long it happened or anything. We just know the event to happen. Then in Judges chapter 4 through 5, we get to Deborah and Barak. Deborah was actually the judge. When Israel sinned again, this time it was an internal enemy. One of the nations that they had not conquered, one of the Canaanites, had a king named Jabin. And he actually ruled the northern side of Israel for 20 years. Those time periods are getting longer. And this time God raised up a woman to judge. And her name was Deborah. And she ordered Barak to lead the nations of, or the tribes of Naphtali, Zebulun, into war. There are northern tribes. And this is where Jabin was headquartered at. Problem was, Barak refused to go unless Deborah went with him. And that's mentioned in chapter 4, verse 8. So Barak said to her, "If you will go with me, then I will go. If you will not go with me, I will not go." So Deborah told him that she would go, but the decisive blow would go to a hand of a woman, not a man, because of that choice that he made. And in verse 9 she said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours on that journey that you're about to take, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman." Then Deborah rose and went with Barak to Kadesh. Sisera was the general of the Canaanite army. It was a complete rout. The Barak managed to destroy the Canaanite army, but the general, the Canaanite general Sisera, escaped. He ran for his life. He stopped to rest at a Kenite ally's tent. Kenites were an ally of the Canaanites. But while he slept, the wife, Jael, and we can tell from her name that she was Israelite, pounded a wooden stake through his head while he was sleeping and killed him. And so that ended the Canaanite rule for quite a while. And peace lasted for about 40 years. But again, Israel sinned. And in Judges chapter 6 through 8, we now have another country that came in, and that was Midian. Came in. And they held the central region of Israel, and they held it for about 7 years. Their holding it was very much a disaster for Israel, because the central region of Israel is the breadbasket. It's like somebody coming into the United States and holding the plains. The rest of the country started suffering because somebody had control of the food source. So God picked Gideon to be the next judge. And it's interesting because you start looking at it and you're saying, well, if you start looking at some of these judges, you say, well, Othniel, I can understand. He was a son of a, or nephew of a famous Israelite. But now he said, you know, like he picks Ehud, and most left-handed fighters are not that good of fighters. Shamgar is doing it with a wooden stick. He picks a lady. That's not your usual person you would think of being the next judge. And now he picks Gideon. Gideon is the last son of an insignificant farmer in the tribe of Benjamin, which is an insignificant tribe. And when God says, you're next, Gideon took quite a bit of convincing. He was not set in mind or frame of mind to say, I'm going to be leading Israel. And he asked God several times to basically convince him that, yeah, God really did want him. But Gideon does manage to gather an army. He gathers it from Manasseh, Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali. So basically the north, central and north parts of the country. Got a good-sized gathering. God told him, too big of an army. Tell everybody who doesn't want to fight to go home. And he lost about two-thirds of the army. And God says, still too many. Has them narrowed down to basically 300 people. And then the men were outfitted to make themselves appear that they were a vastly larger group than they really were. Each one was given a trumpet. Normally that's given for a whole company. Each one's given a torch. And in the middle of the night, they surround the Midianite army up on the hillsides. And then suddenly blast the trumpets, break torches, and it looks to the Midianites like they're surrounded by a large army that just appeared out of nowhere. There was so much panic that the Midianites basically mostly killed themselves. Then the rest of the army was summoned by Gideon, and they drove the Midianites south. Then Gideon also then sent word ahead to Ephraim to cut off the way of escape. And basically almost nobody in the Midianite army survived from that. The people were so excited about Gideon, they wanted to make him king. They refused. But while he lived for 40 years, the land had peace. Then in Judges chapter 9, we have basically civil war happen. Because a man named Abimelech, who is one of Gideon's sons, Gideon had lots of sons. Gideon had 70 sons. You thought you had a big family. Abimelech is one of the younger sons. But Abimelech takes it into his head that he should be king. Gideon had refused. But after Gideon dies, Abimelech decides to set himself up as king. And he starts out his reign by killing all his brothers. So there's no competition from his viewpoint. Though one of his brothers, the youngest brother of all, escaped. And he begins ruling in Shechem, which is in the middle of the country, in Ephraim. He manages to rule for 3 years. But God stirred up a rebellion against Abimelech. And then while he was out of town, the city rebelled. And then Abimelech comes back in with his army and has to reconquer his own capital. And basically conquers the city, except a group of the rebels escape into a tower in the center of the city. So Abimelech gets the bright idea he's going to burn the tower down with the people inside of it alive. So they're stacking wood up, and Abimelech decides he's the one who's going to light the fire. And as he goes up to light the fire, a lady up in the tower looks down, throws a millstone, which is one of the hang gliding stones, down on top of his head, crushes his skull from the top of the tower. And Abimelech did not want to be known that somebody, the lady killed him. So he orders one of his servants to slay him right there, but he ends up dying. He would have died anyway. And for what we remember, then a lady killed him by throwing a millstone. And that ended the rule of Abimelech. Again, we find out there are other countries take over. There's very little that's mentioned. But at the end of beginning of Judges 10, 1 through 5, we're told about Tola. All we know about him basically is how many kids he had, which was a lot. and that he ruled for 23 years. And then the next judge is also mentioned is Jair, and he reigned for 23 years. Oh, I got it backwards. 22 years. 23 years for Tola. Jair was 22 years. Other than that, we don't know too much about him. But we do know, starting with verse 6, that we have an alliance between the Philistines and the Ammonites. So it starts with Judges chapter 10, verse 6. Goes down through verse 12. Chapter 12. From 10:6 to 12, verse 1. And what we have is the Philistines and the Ammonites. They basically form an alliance and conquer portions of Israel. And a series of judges are raised up to take care of them. Focus was mainly on the Ammonites at the beginning. And this is where we have a series of judges. The first judge is Jephthah. Jephthah is, again, one of those people that are selected that you sometimes might have wondered, why did God pick him? Especially if you were out to pick a judge. Israel had started worshiping a number of false idols. In fact, look at Judges 10, verse 6. And notice how bad they've gotten off. It says, and then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, served the Baals and Asheroth, the gods of Aram, the gods of Sidon, the gods of Moab, the gods of the sons of Ammon, the gods of the Philistines. Thus they forsook the Lord and did not serve him. It's not just Baal and Asheroth anymore. They picked, you know, all the other countries around them. They're now serving those gods as well. And this time they were conquered for 18 years. And then Jephthah was selected as God's judge to drive out the Ammonites. His selection is interesting because he's an illegitimate son of a harlot. And all his brothers wouldn't have anything to do with him. Again, it's not the type of person that you necessarily would say, hey, he's the best hero. God's purposely picking out people that you wouldn't not necessarily expect. Jephthah is remembered because he made a rash vow before he set off to war, that he would offer to God the first who greeted him when he returned home from defeating the Ammonites. And he did defeat the Ammonites successfully, and the first to greet him when he returned home was his only daughter, his only child. And so he offered her to God. Depending on how you want to read it, it says as a burnt offering, which means wholly given over. God doesn't accept human sacrifices. So that if you read through the old law, what would have been done would be that she was dedicated to God for the rest of her life. But that's what he's remembered for. Then there were three other men that follow Jephthah to serve as judges. Jephthah served for only 6 years. Then there was another one named Ibzan. And he served for 7 years. Then Elon served for 10 years. And then after that was Abdon. And he only served for 8 years. If you notice, the reign of the judges are getting, for the most part, shorter. The time they're conquered is getting longer. The reigns of the judges, where they stay faithful, are getting shorter. So if you add all these up, these are a little bit longer anyway. And then starting with Judges chapter 13, we have the famous stories of 13 through 16. Is the famous story of Samson. These judges basically took care of the Ammonites. The Philistines are still there. and there's still a problem. Israel had sinned, and this time God allowed the Philistines to rule over them for 40 years. Each time it gets longer, or it gets overall scale gets longer. And a boy is selected to be the next judge before he's even born. And he was to live his life under a Nazirite vow. That vow required three basic parts to it. They couldn't touch anything dead, they couldn't eat anything made from the products of grape, and they could not cut their hair. Those were parts of the Nazirite vow. And that person was considered dedicated to God. There's not much way to describe Samson but that he was a spoiled brat when he grew up. He was incredibly strong, but he had this desire for Philistine women, and he was constantly chasing after them. And his arguments over the women constantly put him at odds with the Philistines. Unlike the other judges, other than maybe Shamgar, most of the other judges lead armies to the conquering of whoever's conquering them. What we see in Samson, what's different is he's just got a personal grudge because they keep interfering with his selected lifestyle. And the other problem that we find with Samson is he didn't take his Nazirite vows very seriously. He broke them. And when he broke the last one, which was with his hair, telling Delilah he couldn't have his hair cut, and she had his hair cut, God finally said, enough's enough, and stopped supporting him. But eventually, he repented. It does mention right towards the end of his life, he repented. And in his death, he managed to kill about 3,000 of the Philistine leaders. He managed to kill all the leading Philistines, 3,000 of them, more than he killed during his lifetime, which was not a short number of people either. But the Philistines were never actually driven out. There's still a problem. Because all he did was basically settle a personal grudge. And it was left for David to finally settle the problem with the Philistines. Well, we have one more section in the period of Judges. I'm actually going to get through it all.
Wow.
From 17 to 21 is a period of anarchy. There's a series of little stories that tell us how bad it got in Israel. In Judges 17 and 18, what we find is a fascinating story about how false religions start. There's a story about a man who steals from his own mother, gets caught, gives the money back, partly, and that money is then, for whatever reason, is then used to make a idol. It explains why, because of superstitions basically coming up. It's done to make an idol. Guy starts up his own religion. Now this thief that stole from his own mother starts up his own religion. Some people from Dan happen to come by, or actually there was a priest that actually comes by. He's convinced to become a priest of this guy's religion because the pay was good. Then some people from Dan came by and asked for some advice while they were going to go conquer another city. They managed to conquer the other city, decided it was the false god that gave them the advantage, came back, stole the false god while they went and took it with them up to Dan, the new capital Dan. And that religion then sticks around for about 1,000 years. And it's all started by a thief and his superstitious mother who didn't want to take the money back without giving it to some type of god. It's a fascinating story how that happens. Then in chapters 19 through 21, we find another problem that is mentioned, and that is that homosexuality appeared in Israel, in one of the cities in Benjamin. And even though Benjamin is warned that they have a city that was just like Sodom and Gomorrah, totally wiped out because of homosexuality, Benjamin's warned they have people like that in their midst. Benjamin says, we don't care. It's our city. And so the rest of the tribes of Israel come in and they make war on Benjamin. Benjamin tries to defend itself and is basically totally wiped out, down to 600 men. Totally wiped out the tribe before the rest of the Israelites said, oh, wait, we need to stop. And then they looked and said, oops, we almost wiped out a whole tribe. And one of the problems was they had taken a vow saying they were not going to give any of their daughters or their sons to marry anybody in Benjamin. And they said, wait a minute, we got 600 men with no wives. So we wiped them all out. And so the very last chapter is about how they arranged it for them to just happen to be able to steal some of their daughters at a festival. And they just basically turn a blind eye to it. So they said, well, we didn't give them to them. They took them for themselves, but at least, and then they were able to repopulate Benjamin from that tribe. What you find in Judges is a series of lessons. There's tons of lessons that we can learn from Judges. And can't go through them all. But it illustrates human nature, how we have a tendency to go from bad to worse. It shows how quickly people forget their lessons from history. Things are not passed down from one generation to another. We ought to pay attention to that as Christians. I oftentimes mention it. If you take a look at the length of time most churches survive, it's about three generations. And it's for the same reason. There's the group that starts it, that's everybody's gung-ho. There's the next group that basically remembers what happened. And then the third generation rises up and they don't remember anything. Nor were they taught. And so things fall off the map and go sour. We do the same thing. You might look at it and say, look at how bad the people in the Judges were. People still do the same thing. And it shows also how God can use both the good and the evil, the weak, the despised, to accomplish His purpose. Because each time when God picked a judge, it wasn't because the judge was such a great person, or somebody would say he's a great hero. God picked people so to show that He was in control. And we have to learn how to depend upon God. Hope this lesson was useful to you. Just a quick survey of the book. But I'd like to offer an opportunity this evening. If there's anyone here who's not a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there's anyone here who is a child of God, I would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf. Why don't you come forward and stand and sing the song selected.